Let's call this meeting of the Senate Resources Committee to order and let the record reflect that it's 3:30 p.m. on Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. Also, let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. Present are Senator Keel, Senator Reinbold, Senator Bishop, Senator Coghill, Senator Giesel, Senator Kawasaki, and myself, Senator Birch. I was looking to see if there's any other legislators in the audience. I see none. I see a former legislator in the second row, Representative Dan. At this time, I'd also like to remind everyone to please turn off your cell phones. Although I might be using mine for a timer up here. And this is being the first hearing in the Senate Resources Committee for the 31st Legislature. I'd like to start things off with a brief round of introductions. First of all, Chris Birch, I'll be chairing Senate Resources this year. My background is I'm a mining engineer, have served in the House for a couple of years, and been in Alaska for a large part of my life. I've very much been associated with the oil and gas industry for certainly a number of years, having started to work on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline right out of school. But with that, maybe we could go around and allow committee members to introduce themselves and kind of recognize their staff in the room.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jesse Keel. I represent Senate District Q, the northeast corner of southeast Alaska. If you sort of put your elbow on Juneau and your fingers on Glacier Bay National Park, you'd sweep up to Gustavus, Haines and Clukwan, Skagway, and after that you're hitting Canadians. I am pleased to be joined in the room by Edric Carrillo, a member of my staff who has worked for other legislators in the past. Lifelong Alaskan, I pick fish in Bristol Bay, work tourism, and I've also done a lot of public policy stuff, and so I'm looking forward to working with the committee.
Thank you, Senator. And notably, Senator Keel's parents are constituents of mine in South Anchorage, and good to have you down here.
Reinbold? Senator Reinbold, born and raised here, and I want to point out my staff first. Ted Kelly is here. He will be helping me with this committee, and I'm a passionate believer in resource development. I think Alaska does it right. We're very, very effective at responsible resource development. I think it is the key to the future of Alaska and getting us out of this recession. I am married to a petroleum engineer, and my son is also, I have two sons that are engineers as well. And I am absolutely convinced that being open for business is what we need to be in Alaska right now. So I stand, you know, by the governor in regards to being open for business, and I'm excited to see what this session brings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Click Bishop, for those of you that don't know me, Senate District C, roughly one-third of Alaska, so I'll just leave it at that. Commissioner Designee Feige, I have been through the process. So relax.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Coghill from Fairbanks North Pole area. I've been in the legislature a few years, served on the resource some, a fierce defender of states' rights, and look forward to what we can do with this administration on not only protecting our access, but building off of what we already got. So. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kathy Giesel, I've chaired this committee for the last 6 years. I'm a territorial kid, just like Senator Coghill, born and raised in Fairbanks. And, of course, that gives me a mining background because that's how Fairbanks started. I'm also a nurse practitioner, and as I presented at the Resource Development Council last month, our resources, the development of them, creates healthy Alaskans. And perhaps at some time I'll share that significant journal article that showed the health of Alaskans have improved since we've begun developing our resources. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Scott Kawasaki. I served for 8 years in the House Resources Committee before moving on to the Finance Committee. I look forward to serving with the members here. I, too, am from Fairbanks, and as was mentioned, Fairbanks grew up as a mining town, late 1800s. Suddenly it was a booming town. and it still is today. I don't have any oil derricks or mines in the district that I represent in downtown Fairbanks, but I have a lot of the miners and the people who work on the North Slope who live and work in the district. So I'm just glad to be here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senators. I, at this time, would like to introduce our staff here, my staff, Trevor Fulton, back here on the right, no stranger to many of you. He'll be our committee aide this session. Chris Dickrell in the front here is our Senate Records Secretary. And most importantly, we have, keeping the track of the phones and everything, we have Nate Williams in the corner. And Nate is going to be helping us with the public testimony side of this hearing, and then Doug Bridges is also a session moderator, assisting us as a session moderator. Great to have you all here this afternoon. The purpose of our meeting today is to discuss the governor's appointment of Corey Feige as commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. The mission of the Department of Natural Resources is to develop, conserve, maximize, and use the use of Alaska's natural resources consistent with a public purpose. Or public interest. The department's major programmatic areas include agriculture, forestry, geological and geophysical surveys, mining, land and water, oil and gas, and parks and rec. We do intend, as I mentioned earlier, to take public testimony later in the hearing, but right now we'd like to begin by hearing from the commissioner designee and then move on to committee questions. So, Commissioner, you come forward. I thought at this point maybe you could just give us, get your name on the record and then just give us a little background qualifications and for those of us that aren't familiar with you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Corey Feige, and I am the commissioner designee for the Department of Natural Resources. It is a great pleasure to be before you all this afternoon, and I can tell you that having lived in Alaska now for a little over 20 years, I never imagined myself sitting before a legislative committee as the commissioner designee for Department of Natural Resources. It is a great honor to be given that opportunity, but I am also humbled by the level of responsibility that comes with this position and the impact that it can have on the lives of Alaskans. I will begin my introduction by talking about my qualifications. I believe you all do have my resume. Professionally, I have been employed in the natural resource industry for a little over 30 years. I am a geophysicist and an engineer by education and by practice, and I've had the great fortune over the course of my career to spend a great deal of time working internationally. And that international experience has given me a very clear understanding of the importance of a robust and scientifically based permitting process. I've worked mining and oil and gas, I've done geothermal work, and I've worked with companies aiming to deploy new technologies for energy generation or just into the energy market space. I've been responsible for global project teams and aligning all of the varied stakeholder interests associated with those projects. Most recently in the public sector, I was employed as the director of the Division of Oil and Gas for about a year and a half. What my resume doesn't tell you is that I grew up on a horse ranch in Wyoming, and my dad was a miner. My father, thank you, was director of safety and health for a company that had several very large open-pit uranium mines operating in the state of Wyoming. And my mom, in addition to raising four daughters and running the business, also had a career in real estate and commercial development. No doubt, growing up in that place and in that family environment certainly influenced my career path. But more importantly, I think it also established my belief in what careful and diligent land and resource management looks like, and it gave me an appreciation of what it can do to build strong communities. It wasn't uncommon when I was a child, nor is it now, to see cattle and antelope grazing in the range adjacent to producing oil wells or active mines. And in the last 10 to 15 years, they've added very large wind farms into that same range mix. It is that careful conservation and management of the land and the water and the resources, using management practices that are focusing on multiple uses, that has allowed heavy industry to very successfully coexist with agribusiness, with hunting, with fishing, and with outdoor recreation. I believe that it's that kind of careful stewardship and land management that drives strong economies, it provides the jobs, and it builds strong, healthy communities with a good quality of life. If I'm fortunate enough to be confirmed by the legislature, my priorities at DNR will be, number one, to see that Alaska's land and resources are successfully managed to allow for multiple uses and to support a thriving economy. A priority will be that we secure the remaining 4 to 5 million acres of land due to Alaskans from the federal government since statehood, and a priority to steward resource development in such a way that we not only give Alaskans opportunities today, but that we preserve this very special place for our kids, to make sure it's someplace that they want to call home and that they can enjoy the same opportunities that we have. In the 7 weeks of my tenure as Commissioner Designee of DNR, I have met a great number of the people in the DNR team, and I can tell you that they are committed, passionate professionals who take their work very, very seriously. They are proud of that their efforts have contributed to the generation of over $1.4 billion in state revenue in fiscal year 18. And if I am confirmed, it will be my great honor to continue to lead them in that effort. And that concludes my introduction, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Designee Feige. At this point, we'll be pleased to entertain any questions from anyone on the panel. You've hit. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I had the pleasure of a few weeks ago going to Red Dog Mine with you, and I have to tell you how impressed I was with your obvious knowledge about the mining industry and geology. It was great. I wanted to ask you a question. This relates to, let me quickly turn to the date. You testified before this committee in 2016, and I'm not asking you what you had for breakfast that day, okay?
Thank you.
This will be a much more high-level question than that. But the subject that day was the plan of development for BP, for the North Slope, related to gas. And you were denying, rejecting that plan of development. And so while you were rejecting it, it actually is the commissioner's job to actually make that rejection. As commissioner, how will you receive these kinds of plans of development now? These are annual plans of development. You can correct me if I'm in error. Companies are required to produce, telling how they're going to develop the resource that's available. So could you talk a little bit about that? That rejection was of significant concern, and that was why it was the subject of the meeting.
Correct. And through the chair, Senator Giesel, thank you for that. When we see plans of development or plans of operation come before DNR, it's important that we take a careful look at the due diligence with which the resource is being produced, and I believe that that was the subject and the question at the heart of the Prudhoe Bay POD that you're talking about. We have to ensure, working with our counterparts at AOGCC, that the rate of development is appropriate to ensure that we're capturing the full time value of money on those resources, and then AOGCC, as you know, has the jurisdiction for making sure that those resources are being produced in such a way that we aren't inadvertently producing too fast and leaving resource in the ground. So I think it's very important, as we are reviewing those PODs, to take a very a comprehensive look at what's being presented to us, make sure that the technical development that's ongoing makes sense for where that particular unit or development is in its life cycle, work with our compatriots, as I said, at AOGCC to make sure that we have diligence in how we're producing that and don't run the risk of wasting any resource. But at the end of the day, that production is the revenue stream that comes into the state. The state receives the royalties from that production. And we also need to be sure that we are protecting the state's revenue interest and that revenue stream coming to the state. So it is not something that we can take lightly. We have to consider them very seriously and very comprehensively.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Any other questions?
I have one. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Commissioner Designee Feige, I see you're still on the UAF Engineering Mines and Advisory Council. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr.
And
Senator Bishop.
Have you checked to make sure that there's no ethical violation for you to still serve in that capacity? I hope not. I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
And through the chair, Senator Bishop, thank you very much for that. I have looked into that, and because my role is advisory and is aimed at helping to steward programs that will attract engineering students to the state and ensure that those engineering programs are aligned with industry needs, I don't believe that there's an ethical conflict there, and it is a role that I take as near and dear to my heart. I think it's critically important, given that Alaska is the only Arctic state and that engineering and resource development means so much to us. It is imperative that we grow our own engineers, if you will, in this state, and that we are graduating engineers that have the Arctic engineering background in their engineering education. And I think UAF is like UAA, can offer a considerable amount to achieving that goal.
Thank you.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Designee Feige, once upon a memory, Governor Palin and the legislature at the time set a goal for Alaska's North Slope Natural Gas Project to get to a FERC license. Mm-hmm. We've taken a bunch of different directions, different paths to try and get there. We're closer now than we were then. Would love to hear your thoughts. Is that still the right goal? Are we doing it in the right way? What changes would happen with Commissioner Feige at DNR?
Okay. And through the chair, Senator Keel, thank you for that. You are correct. We have a long history of attempts to monetize gas, especially from the North Slope. And in fact, you can go back to the original Prudhoe Bay documents and note that the plan was originally to be producing gas from Prudhoe Bay within a year or two after production actually commenced. So unfortunately, we've had several runs at that. But I think you are correct that we are closer now than we have been with any previous attempt. In moving forward, where the current administration is at in looking at that project, we're going through a period of due diligence to understand where the project actually sits, where are we actually in terms of securing the FERC license for this program, how much more engineering work needs to be done, data that needs to go to FERC, and what that timeline looks like. That due diligence needs to be completed before we can determine what the next best step for the project is. I do believe that absolutely North Slope gas will be monetized. If you look at the barrel oil equivalent for the 36 TCF reserves that we have on the North Slope, that's a little over 6 billion barrels of oil equivalent. That is a huge resource, and absolutely that resource will be monetized. Whatever that project looks like, it's going to have to be an economic project. And I think that enough time has passed in the last several years that as we're going through this due diligence, we also need to be taking a look at how technology has changed in that intervening time. And is the project that we have before us the best that technology can provide? If we're applying the best technology, we're in a much stronger position to develop an economic project that we can then move forward.
Just a follow-up,
please.
Rough guess. What are the odds in 4 years of Commissioner Feige that it will be monetized while you're in the job?
Through the chair, Commissioner Keel, within 4 years, that the resource will be monetized? Not at all, because the build-out of the project will take much longer than that, and securing the market and the market space, or the market toehold, if you will, to get that product into the market will take longer than 4 years.
Thank you.
Senator?
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here today. I appreciate you coming to the office earlier. Just a handful of questions I have. As was mentioned earlier in the Constitution, Article 8, Section 2, dealing with general authority of the legislature, and also it's sort of similar to what you're doing about utilization, development, conservation of natural resources, including land and water. What do you think is meant by conservation in terms of both the Constitution and then the statutes that govern your commissioner?
And through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I believe that conservation relates to, as I described in my introductory remarks, when you are conserving and maximizing and stewarding the use of the resources, it allows for the monetization or development of one resource without it being at the detriment of other resources. I think it's very important in a state like Alaska that we do not pit one resource against another. I think that balance has to be the key. We have to apply the best possible science and the best possible understanding of the development of those resources when we're considering projects and development programs. And I think it's imperative that DNR work with our sister agencies at Fish and Game and Environmental Conservation to make sure that we're considering the fish and the wildlife and the habitat, and that we're considering clean water and clean air as we are constructing and moving projects forward. So I think conservation is key to ensuring balanced use and no development of one resource to the detriment of another.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chairman? Since you brought up water and your work, you Department of Natural Resources deals mostly with the water, the quantity size, the Fish and Game deals mostly with habitat, DEC deals mostly with the quality. Can you tell me how you will work with those two other departments in, if there is a plan of development or some sort of permit for some sort of industry, how you will work together with those two departments?
Oh, certainly. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, in our work with Fish and Game, as you know, Fish and Game will inform us on the volume of water necessary to protect fish that may be in a stream or in lakes. For example, on the North Slope, if a company needs to extract water from a lake for ice road or ice pad construction, DNR works with Fish and Game to determine the appropriate level of withdrawal. And in terms of DEC and also on the Fish and Game side with the habitat, protecting the riparian area, you know, the near shore area, and then with DEC making sure that discharges that come from any project, and ultimately the goal for project developers, certainly on the exploration side, is to have what we call a zero discharge. But as you move into developments and you have effluent streams and produced water streams that have to be managed, it's working with DEC to make sure that the disposal path for those produced waters and for those effluent streams are managed appropriately and aren't allowed to harm the land and the use.
Can I ask another question, Mr. Chair? Sort of along the same lines, was mentioned just for utilization, development, conservation. Just a question on where you would place the value, because state parks is under your control as well. Where there, of course, you know, the mine is always underneath the state park or something. You know, there's always something that happens, right? But just can you tell me the value that you would place on not developing a particular area of land that folks utilize?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, as you know, parks are governed by the management plan, and each of our parks unit has a series of or one specific characteristic that's particularly important. And obviously, whatever the activity, be it a mine or oil and gas or geothermal or hydro or any kind of development, has to fit within the framework of those management plans. And if it wasn't a contemplated activity, for example, within NPRA, we have the integrated activity plan that contemplates activities that can occur together, that can coexist and be used within the NPRA. Those very same types of authorizations and background research, if you will, but it's the adjudication of those projects is central to finding out where they fit or if it is appropriate within a legislatively designated area or within something like NPRA. I hope that answers your question.
It does. Great. Can I have one more question, Mr. Chairman? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we often hear about mining land and water, one division, the other oil and gas, the two sexy divisions, but we don't really hear a lot about agriculture, division of ag, also an important part of DNR. And I just want to hear your thoughts on the division of ag and how you plan to enhance sort of its viability in the state.
Okay. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the Division of Agriculture does play an important role within developing agribusiness in Alaska. You know that in the Fairbanks area and interior, it is field crop as well as livestock. In South Central, it's likewise field crop and livestock. The Division of Ag has done a terrific job in the last few years of securing market space for farmers and crop developers in the state and giving them an avenue to get their products into major grocery store chains, market to access like Walmart and Kars and Kroger, where prior to the efforts of the Alaska Grown Program, it was very difficult for those producers to get a toehold in those markets. And they are now, through the farmers market program, also providing an access into a much smaller market space through the farm markets and letting the smaller producers get their product out and into the market space through that. So I think enhancing and growing those programs, making sure that programs that return value to our farmers are very important. And I think that there is currently a lot of interest in growing a livestock in the agricultural space, and that will certainly be fraught with challenge because of the cost of doing so in the climate that we have. But I think that that Division of Ag is squarely focused on that, and I think that that is it's also a food safety and a food security return to the people of Alaska to ensure that we've got the crop and the livestock locally that's being developed. I think we saw with the November 30th earthquake in South Central and folks lined up at Kars and Fred Meyer that food security is very much an issue in this state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you have been the director of the Division of Oil and Gas, so you've worked in DNR, but now you're going to be the head of it. On a high level, what do you see as the opportunities and challenges of the department going forward, and where would you like to guide it under your leadership?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, I think currently, challenges before DNR are making sure that we can operate effectively in the current fiscal climate and with the budget money that we have available to us. To achieve that end, one of our near-term challenges is going to be, and we're in the process of this now, taking a look at all of our regulations and making sure that the regulations that we have out there make sense, that they aren't still anchored in the late 1960s, early 1970s, that things have been modernized, and that we as a department can do business at the pace of business, because when we're talking about development programs and you're talking about business period, time is money. So we need to be able to be responsive and timely in the work that we do. We need to be sure that our internal processes are as efficient and streamlined as possible, and we need to ensure that the permit products that we're putting out and the authorizations that we're issuing are high quality, legally defensible, and that we have done our internal due diligence. And I think the opportunities before the department right now are that we have an administration that believes very firmly in driving the state's economy through resource development. And I look forward to being able to steward that and help champion that and help attract investment back to Alaska through DNR being able to do its work the best that we can. That helps companies de-risk their investment in this state. And then just messaging out to companies who have worked here before but have chosen to take their money and go other places, we need them back. And we need to message to them that we very much would like to attract those investment dollars back to the state. We need to remind them of our resource endowment on both the oil and gas and the mining side. And we need to get them excited like we are about what Alaska has to offer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Senator Cochran.
Mr. Chairman, I have three individual questions, if it's all right with you. The first one is going to be an easy one. Those of us from the Fairbanks area feel that placer mining kind of centers out of Fairbanks. And if you think of placer mining, probably in the United States, we're probably the placer miners. And the rules quite often come down from both the feds and the state on both water quality and those types of things. The placer miners feel that they have been continually pushed and edged on a variety of different issues. I'm just bringing it up for your attention. We are working on some of the regulation changes. We're going to push a little bit. But because of us from the Fairbanks area, we feel that it's our duty to make sure that placer mining stays as a part of a viable part of the economy. Is there anything that that you've seen that you can add value to or that's going to change, or are we in for just a tough slog out in the placer mining world?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, thank you, first of all, for the background information. I think where placer mining is concerned, access is also key, and ensuring that there is access and there are placer mining claims available to be mined. I think that the folks at DEC and Fish and Game do a fine job in taking a look at that activity and ensuring that the protections are in place. I apologize that I don't have a lot of detail on the placer reg specifically, but certainly we'll look into that. But I think that if you feel that it is a distressed area that we need to take a look at the regulations in, I would very much ask and encourage you to reach out to myself and my staff and let us know so that we can start taking a look at that and doing some due diligence around that.
Certainly we'll do that. Some of our large mines depend on what these placer miners dig up, and our geology department at the university and in your neck of the woods are fed tons of information, and we have some wonderful livelihoods out of it. But you bring up, and we will do that. I intend to have a ready, steady path to your world on that. The other thing that you brought up, and it naturally falls out to this, but it falls out to a bigger question, and that is our access to our lands. I was glad to hear you say that you have an international perspective. You get to be one of the biggest land managers in the world, if you think about it. I mean, we have this wonderful geography. You have to rub shoulders with the federal government because they're a bigger landowner. They're divided into several different departments, and so in some regards, you have a singular voice. But I was glad to hear the international perspective because people look at us as an investment place. Unfortunately, I think the federal government doesn't see it quite that way, and we do. And so you have one of the best and most singularly focused voices, I think, in the United States on land management. We have several protections. We have a Statehood Act. We certainly have our Constitution. Mm-hmm. We have ANILCA, ANCSA. All three of those big documents have been impacted by federal land management. So ANILCA is probably the unique law given to any state on conservation and land management and access to lands in any of the United States, period. It's probably the least respected in Congress, but the most needy for us to use. I ask you, I guess, are you ready to defend? Are you knowledgeable in that arena? Is this something that is on your radar list? If not, I want to put it there. But if we don't defend our access into the lands, mm-hmm. and when we had the federal land designations given us, we have contiguous boundaries that probably are the more unique in any place in the United States. I just want your answer on how you will use the Statehood Act, our ANCSA, our ANILCA. It seems to me that even a guidance from BLM can overrule our whole statehood compact and our Constitution. So can you give me an idea where you're heading on this?
Yeah, absolutely. And through the chair, Senator Coghill, I agree with you that we need a full court press on Department of Interior and the federal government to secure the acreage due to Alaska. It has been many, many years, and there have been many, many administrations, as you know, that have approached this. I think keeping a bit of a constant tension there is a good thing. I think we need to talk to them frequently and keep lines of communication open. I think we start with pressing for removal of PLOs and the easements that have been in place since statehood for study and classification of lands. The TAPS Corridor 5150 comes to mind, and various others that would allow, if they are lifted, would allow state top files to attach, our selections to attach. I think we need to press very aggressively for that, because when we look at being able to steward and shepherd resource development in Alaska, a lot of those lands have high prospectivity and high potential revenue value to the state, as well as value for hunting, value for fishing, and value for outdoor recreation. So protecting our interests and pressing full court, I think we're positioned at least for the next 18 months or so with a federal administration that is going to be willing to work with us on that. We have, as you know, some alignments with people at BLM and people within the administration, and we have a very strong congressional delegation that can help us deliver on that. In terms of access that I mentioned before, one of the things that we are doing presently with our state selections is ensuring that areas, and the Ambler District comes to mind, ensuring that the selection of lands like that district have an access corridor attached to them. And I believe that the team within DMLW refers to those as threads. Those are the threads that tie us to existing infrastructure. And it's critical that those threads, which form the access corridors, also be part of the selections for conveyance purposes so that we have that access.
Thank you. One last question, a little different topic, but I appreciate you talking about the access, because rivers and RS-2477s are our corridors right now. We use air significantly, which brings me to the other question. Your DGGS does a wonderful job of showing kind of the bounty of Alaska, and the federal government is a partner with us, and though I talked about ANILCA, we really truly are a partner. We have to map this land. And as we head into mapping this land, on one hand, we want to nudge shoulders with them. On the other hand, we have to enlist them in getting good mapping coordinates so that when we're talking about our resources, our EIS process is a little cleaner because we actually know what we're talking about. There's a whole range of issues like that. But on mapping Alaska, I think if we go at the pace we've been going now, it'll be 15 generations before we actually look at this place as a map. Have you thought about how to enlist with the federal government as a better partner, as some place that we can get our coordinates a little better, maybe broaden out a little bit? Because I think whether it's a new greenfield project or things that we're doing on roads and highways, it's important.
And through the chair, Senator Coghill, in response to that, yes, the administration has been, since about the first week, discussing with Department of Interior, and this actually is directly to your point, discussing with Department of Interior the acquisition of some essentially real-time GPS units. They're called CURES, and that's the acronym, and I apologize. I don't have the full name. But the CURES stations would allow us to complete the survey network within the state. At present, our GPS network is such that it takes about, it's several hours. It's roughly 4 hours, I believe, on location to get a cadastral survey accuracy for a point location. With the completion of this network, it would allow us to upgrade the whole network, and it would convert from several hours of time on location to an accurate reading to a matter of minutes. And so BLM, in their efforts to be surveying the boundaries of our selections and complete the survey throughout, especially throughout interior Alaska, the addition of that network would be key. What has been conceived of at this point is to work with Department of Interior for receiving those units. The state would be responsible for maintaining them and doing ongoing care and maintenance. We have been examining the possibility of some sort of a subscription program that would bring in fees that would cover the cost of maintaining that network, and then those same stations would be available to the subscribers. So if you are a company wanting to develop a mine or oil and gas or, you know, whatever, you would have access to that survey network as well. So I think that is one of the linchpins in what has slowed us down. And to think about someplace as vast as Alaska and getting on a helicopter and all of the human risk that comes with that and the cost that comes with that, to say that we're going to go out and cadastrally survey, you know, with a rod and a guy, all of the sites that need to be surveyed, that is untenable. And it's time that we modernize that and work with Interior to get that done.
Just a time frame on that, Mr. Chairman, if you give me an idea of what your time frame is on the acquisition, if possible.
And ideally, through the chair, Senator Coghill, ideally it would be within the next 6 to 12 months.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Commissioner. Could you clarify the PLO? I think I know what that is.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, public land order.
That's a federal, primarily a federal.
Correct. Correct. A withdrawal. Correct.
Great. Thank you. Senator Bishop?
I was getting nervous. I thought it was the Palestinian Liberation Army for a minute, but thanks for the clarification. Your career is, at least from 1999 to date, has been in the private sector with a brief one-year stint at the department that you're now going to lead. So with that being said, you've been through the permitting regime from top to bottom, east and west, across multiple agencies. So I'm sure that you might want to have some ideas for the departments to work together and not in silos to expedite not superseding the law and doing our due diligence to protect our lands, but I think that you might have some efficiencies. Would you care to comment on that?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Bishop. Yes, I have been through it just a few times. And what I can tell you is that from the applicant side, understanding what is expected, understanding which agencies you need to talk to for what authorizations, understanding the full scope when you're in the development phase, understanding the full scope of all of the permits and authorizations required, and then having guidance and a direct point of contact in those agencies is essential. That simply helps the business of securing those permits and authorizations to move forward. And in the business world, there is a thing called regulatory risk. And if you don't understand and have some predictability about the process, then the regulatory risk goes up. And so making sure that DNR and our sister agencies are working in a coordinated fashion. And within DNR, you may be aware, we have what's called the Office of Project Management and Permitting, and it is the OPUMP's job to function as the coordinating entity, to be a sole point of contact and to work with the applicant to coordinate not just state permits and state authorizations, but the federal permits as well. And the big federal permit or federal authorization and clearance that's out there is the National Environmental Policy Act, or the EIS, that comes out of that NEPA process. And and OPOMP coordination can help to streamline that effort and keep the agencies talking. Not all of the federal agencies have codified timelines on which they're required to work, and so having an agency or having a representative from something like an OPOMP can be very effective in making sure nothing bogs down. And so what I would want for DNR is for us to develop guidance, for us to develop clear, concise, predictable flowcharts, if you will, or frameworks for what a mining activity or a mining development might look like, and to walk them through that process, have frequent open communication with them, and then help to coordinate through OPUMP, help to coordinate all of those permits to include the federal permits and deliver a project in a very, very cohesive fashion and in a clear fashion that the public and the various stakeholders also understand.
Thank you.
Senator Keel? Or you have Senator Reinbold?
Yeah, but either or.
You haven't spoken yet.
Mr. Chairman, can I have permission to make a comment, not a question? Is that all right? Okay. I just really wanted to say thank you. I don't have as eloquent questions as some of the members who have been, you know, on this, been serving on this committee for a quite long time, but I did really enjoy reading your resume, and I really appreciate the experience, your education, your ability to work interagency. You have been doing this for many, many years, and we're blessed with so many resources up here, and it's just really neat to see somebody. I know the opportunities are probably limitless for you, that you're willing to come and serve the state of Alaska and serve the people of Alaska. So I just wanted to say thank you for stepping forward.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions, if I may. Thanks. Commissioner, when we spoke earlier, we talked a little bit about a couple of potential timber sales, one in process, one starting its process in my district. And we didn't really have the chance to explore the options and opportunities for ideally getting more Alaskan jobs per you know, unit of cut, per million board feet. What opportunities do you see for the department to help do more in-state or promote more in-state processing?
Thank you for that. Through the chair, Senator Keel, first of all, within the Division of Forestry presently, we have some pretty significant staff retention issues. Forestry has been a pretty difficult road to hoe, as you know, from your district in this state for quite a number of years. And it is absolutely a priority for me to see that we can secure commercial and that we can anchor and retain the commercial industry that we have, and that we can potentially grow that. As you know, the roadless rule, the roadless rulemaking process, we're in the process of challenging the roadless rule within the Tongass. It is the state's position that there should not be a roadless rule for Alaska, that we should be exempted. But barring that, and because that litigation has been stayed, or in abeyance, I apologize, is in abeyance pending the outcome of the rulemaking, the state is looking toward what is called alternative number 6 within that. And that gives the maximum amount of flexibility. It gives the both for the state and for communities. If we win, not if, when we open the Tongass to expanded timber, it's about 2.3 million acres that will come to the state. And we will need at that point in time to assess the board footage. And while we're undertaking that process, I think it's critical that we continue to work things through the existing good neighbor timber sale policy that we have in place. And we've executed a couple of those sales, as I understand, in the last couple of years, and there's one that's been queued up now. And so we can keep the Sawyers going, and we can keep our timber industry going while we're working through the roadless rule, through the rulemaking process. And then at the same time, what I would like to do internally is try to address the retention issues that we've got within our foresters and bring some real talent back into that program. I know that the director there has been very challenged over the last several years. And we have potential amendments to or changes to regulation packages. I mentioned streamlining before. One that would streamline the process for standing up a timber sale, and that is really a modernization of how we go about doing that. So I apologize for a little bit of the shotgun approach there in explaining that to you, but there's a lot of different things moving on the timber side, and all of it dedicated to strengthening that industry, strengthening commercial forest activities in the state, and ensuring that we have the board footage available to us to do so.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, your question raises, I think, another, given the retention issues that you mentioned. Does the division have the resources it needs to make sure that the Alaska Forest Practices Act is followed, whether that's outreach in advance or enforcement where necessary? Is your division sufficiently staffed to do that?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I appreciate the question. And in fiscal times, as the state sees now and coming now, hopefully on the backside of a rather deep recession, the department and the Division of Forestry, like any other, is challenged to do the best we can with the resources that we have. I think what is important for forestry and for good timber practices is that we are taking advantage of commercial sale opportunities where we need fire breaks, that we're taking care of things like the spruce bark beetle outbreak in the Susitna area, in the Mat-Su, and making sure that we're harvesting that timber, which is now a significant fire threat, and extracting commercial revenue and returns from that, and trying to attract companies to work with us to that end. So we will do the best that we can with the resources that we have available to us, most certainly.
I
conclude your questions?
I had a couple of others, but I guess I'd like to follow up maybe with you a little more on the resources to ensure that the Forest Practices Act is and maybe we can take that offline. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, a different division?
Proceed.
Thank you. question, in state parks, number of my constituents have spoken to me in recent years about what they perceive as a significant shift in where the division is putting its resources to a focus on, I guess, a change in park rangers' focus from multiple missions to a very strong emphasis on their law enforcement function. And I think there's a perception that park users are seeing a loss of some services and also a loss of some ability to enjoy the park responsibly. Do you have thoughts, Commissioner, you can share with us about where that focus is most appropriate?
Certainly. And through the chair, Senator Keel, I believe that our park rangers, first and foremost, are there for the protection of public safety. They educate and they enhance the park experience. They are there to preserve and protect the resources. And because they are commissioned law enforcement, if they witness some sort of infraction of the law, could then put themselves in the shoes of law enforcement and act upon that. But I think that their first role needs to be public safety, needs to be education and enhancement of that experience. And I think when we spoke the other day, I mentioned to you that, you know, if we have rangers who feel that they need to be shooting radar on the access road into one of our state parks, they're probably in the wrong line of work, and I would invite them to attend the Trooper Academy, because that's probably where they're better suited. I really want our park rangers to be out there to protect public safety, educate, protect our resources, and enhance that park experience. That's what people will take home with them.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions?
Two more?
Okay.
Thank you. One,
hour.
Two. Yeah. I won't take the half hour. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One unusual entity housed within your department and kind of with two masters would be the Mental Health Trust Land Office. And there have been some interactions with the Trust Land Office within my district lately that I'm familiar with that suggests there's been some difficulty with responsiveness to commercial offerers who want to do business with the Trust, who want to do business on Trust land, and lead times of a year and more, difficulty getting responsiveness. They do serve both the Trust and directly report to you. Can you share with us some of your insights on direction for the Trust Land Office?
Absolutely. And through the Chair, Senator Keel, just for clarification, while the Trust Land Office resides under DNR for continuity and communication purposes, they are managed, or they are guided, I should say, by the Mental Health Trust Enabling Act and then also by the settlement of litigation that reconstituted the Trust Land Office and the Land Grant Trust. They do not directly report to me in a conventional sense. The folks at the Trust Land Office also report up through the actual Trust Board and the CEO of that board. But what DNR does do and how we do work with the Trust Land Office, I hope very effectively, is to help communicate what areas where there may be, for example, land swaps that are necessary. We can function as a conduit with them to Department of Interior to help assist those. In the instance that you're talking about with commercial sales, we can assist with communications to the districts and to the local communities. And if there are conflicts or miscommunications, we can help conduit that back and forth to Trust Land Office. So if there have been breakdowns in that communication, I look forward to being able to get those clarified. I think in some of the issues around the sale and use of trust properties, where DNR has the mandate to manage for multiple uses, the trust has a very, very direct mandate to manage only for the benefit of its trust, of its beneficiaries. So the mental health programs of the state that are funded by the trust. So it's a little bit of a rub in terms of the what we manage for. But we have aligned processes and certainly are looking to assist them with monetizing their land. And if there are ways that we can conduit that through communication or coordination with other agencies, then we absolutely will be doing that.
Thank you. And then one last one from me, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Thank you. Commissioner, over the years, every time significant questions of oil and gas arise, whether it's regulations at the executive branch level or bills the legislature is considering, we observe from the legislative side the dance of the three commissioners, DNR, revenue, and the Attorney General. And who is in the lead and who is in charge sometimes shifts. I have every faith that you will be a team player on a good team. Can you talk to us about your philosophy of what exactly DNR's role is in those issues as they come up, in working through them as the three departments all serve their missions and all serve Alaskans?
And through the Chair, Senator Keel, first of all, DNR, as you know, is landowner lessor as well as regulatory agency. So DNR wears two very distinct hats. I believe that for a healthy DNR and a healthy oil and gas industry, there needs to be a certain amount of tension between those two roles. Because on the landowner lessor side, we are very much wanting to see our resources developed and recoup the revenue from those and the royalties and rents from that development. On the regulatory side, we have the responsibility to give good oversight, do our due diligence, and do the protection and conservation and that balanced approach to resource management that I talked about. Through Division of Mining, Land, and Water, DNR is responsible for access corridors, be they ice roads or access for seismic chutes. On the Division of Oil and Gas side, they are responsible for the surface land use, for development of exploration programs or for development of units. So that would be placement of the pads that the wells will go on, the roads that might connect to them. And through our OPUMP, we also serve the role of, as I mentioned before, being able to coordinate, especially state and federal permits together, to ensure that we have timely development and timely stand-up of development programs and new production. And so I think that there should be, within DNR, a certain amount of tension, a good tension, that says that everyone is fulfilling those roles suitably. When it comes to coordinating with our other agencies, and you mentioned Department of Revenue specifically, you know, we bring the royalty into the state through the royalty accounting section within the Division of Oil and Gas. Those royalties get distributed to the permanent fund and to the UGF, and then Department of Revenue is responsible for the tax collection and bringing that in. So Commissioner Tangeman and I have chuckled a couple of times that we make the money and they count the money. And I don't know that that's entirely true, because the tax regime that is governed by Department of Revenue is also critical to maintaining our competitiveness around the world and attracting investment dollars, just as the way we manage the land and our permitting processes are to attracting that development as well. When it comes to DEC and the other agencies that have authorizations that need to be issued, as I mentioned before, we bring them into the fold and try very hard to coordinate all of those so that we have a cohesive delivery of those projects for the applicant.
Thank you.
Other questions? Well, seeing none, Commissioner Feige, I just wanted to thank you for being here for our inaugural Senate Resources Committee meeting this year, and thank you for a very well-structured, very well-presented background and qualifications summary. It was very, very well done. At this point in time, we have opened the floor for public testimony. I don't believe anybody has signed up, and let me see if there's... And no one has called in. So I guess at this point we are closing public testimony, since it's been open and shut here. And we'll do that.
Think of brief at ease.
Brief at ease. At this point, we will open public testimony. And there's no one, as far as I understand it, is here or online. We have our online resources here. Nobody signed up to testify. So with that, we'll close public testimony. Questions or comments, we pass around a signing sheet, which for the records, I'll quote this, in accordance with AS 3905080, the Senate Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. For Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, Corey Feige. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions. So with that, we'll, I believe we'll take an ease at ease for this. We're doing the, okay. We'll take a brief at ease while We have signed off on the our confirmation sheet. The next committee meeting will be held at 3:30 on January 25th, and we'll have an opportunity then to review the confirmation of Jason Bruni at the as the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation. With that, this meeting is adjourned at 4:33.